This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Bigger Picture. This is an edited recording of the 8th and final BFM Health and Living webinar this year on whether kids today are struggling to learn. This webinar series is presented by AIA, enabling healthier, longer, better lives.
Welcome to BFM's Health and Living 8th webinar. This is the last of our Health and Living webinar series, which started in April of this year. And, you know, we've been faithfully bringing you one webinar every month. And this is, of course, possible thanks to our presenting sponsor, AIA Berhad. So thank you to all of you as well who have been watching and staying with us. Today, we'll be talking about children and learning. Every child's learning ability is different. Some may even have learning difficulties. And this all means that a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to education and development cannot be used, for every single child. And every child, regardless of their ability, needs the right support so that their education is not disrupted. And I think this has become more important than ever during this pandemic, where a lot of learning has taken place online, at home, and perhaps children have been left out in some way or other. So we want to discuss today how parents and educators can tell if their kids are struggling to learn and how we can support them. Our speakers today, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician. How are you, Dr. Rajini?
Fine, thank you, Sharik.
And Madeline Proud, also joining us, Alternative Pathway Curriculum Coordinator and Special Education Teacher at Nexus International School. Hi, Maddie. How are you?
Hi, very well. Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting us here today.
So our guests are here to answer your questions as well. Whether you're a parent, an educator, perhaps a young person, Dr. Rajini, how can parents and educators tell when a child is struggling with learning in school, and especially where there is the danger that stereotypes of being lazy or slow or disruptive may be applied? So how do we make sure that we are identifying children who are struggling?
I think first thing is obviously knowing what the range of norm is, because children acquire skills at different times. Yeah, it's not that you have to be reading by 5 or 6, or there's no one specific age. So it's important that all involved understand that. Number two, yes, if children are acting out in situations where learning is taking place, but they don't seem to be acting out when it's non-learning activities, that should alert parents too, because that may be a sign that the child is stressed about the whole process of learning. And that in itself tells you that that is already a difficulty, even though the child may be actually achieving the goals that have been set. And early signs, often, you know, we always talk about the at-risk child. So children who may have had delays in their early skills, whether it be speech and language skills or even motor skills, those children are at risk, and we should probably be monitoring them and intervening before they get into the stage of exhibiting behaviors. One of the early predictors of learning difficulties is actually the development of language in preschoolers. Often children who have learning issues present early on with delays in understanding language, in communicating, even articulation problems. So, you know, in the Malaysian context, we always talk about the child who is pelat. Yeah, even children with articulation problems are actually at risk of learning problems.
So that there are actually a lot of things that perhaps we tend to brush off as, they'll catch up or they'll change. But there are things that need to be seen as red flags. Maddie, from a learning perspective, what do you observe that could be flags that a child is struggling?
It could be things like a learner might not want to come to school, refusing to go to school, or not wanting to talk about school. Perhaps their attitude has changed. Perhaps they're no longer participating or showing an interest in some of the activities they were quite passionate about beforehand. Maybe they come to school and they look a lot tighter because perhaps their sleeping pattern has all been adjusted, or they're not eating well, perhaps not spending as much time socializing or talking to their friends and becoming a lot more inward about with themselves. Maybe they've got a lot of worries about school. Perhaps they're spending a long time doing their homework, or perhaps refusing or not handing any homework in at all. So I think there's things like looking at behavioral changes, emotional changes, social changes, as well as academic.
So, you know, Maddie, a very Malaysian thing is going to be, if you're not doing well in school, tuition is the answer, some form of enrichment. But, you know, that I think is looking at it from, here's the standard and you're not there, so I'm going to try and push you somehow. But, you know, if you were to look at it from the child's perspective, how do we understand why they are struggling?
Well, on the subject of tuition, I kind of feel like learners, they come to school, they receive a certain amount of knowledge, they're participating, they're putting all their all in. So when it's time to go home, I do think it's important to find the balance within. If out-of-school activities are needed or required, then they should be a passionate interest, something that the learner really, really is interested in and wants to develop.
All right. Dr. Rajini, any thoughts to be able to understand that it's not for lack of trying from the child's perspective?
Yeah, I think, and this is where we need to tease out the kids who are not trying because they cannot do it versus the children who possibly can do it, but there could be other emotional challenges that the child is facing. Yeah. For example, some children who are very sociable when they have difficulties with friends, and then they go to school and, you know, children who are bullied or teased, etc. And then they go to school and they're very stressed about that whole other social aspect. So then they may come across as struggling with their learning as well. The other thing is children who really are not independent. And I always, you know, one of the things I always tell parents before children go to schools is preparing them for going to school is not just about preparing them to read, write, etc. It's preparing them to go and use a communal toilet, which often gets dirty. Even little things like that. I've had a situation where a child was anxious about going to school because he didn't like going to the toilet. And then his attention was affected. And, you know, it was perceived that that child actually maybe had attention deficit, but actually it was anxieties about other things related to learning. Yeah, so it's those things. And even a child who is not independent in taking care of themselves, then to expect them to learn would be difficult.
Is the idea of children having different styles of learning, is that a myth, Dr. Rajini, or is it true?
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, you look at different... I know we always hear about the visual learner, the auditory learner, the kinesthetic learner. But I think it's important to know that you shouldn't put them in those little boxes. I mean, I think this is coming from my perspective. Yes, there are some children, I deal with a lot with children with difficulties. There are some children who may be better at picking up things visually and to a lesser extent auditorily. Personally, I think a lot of kids nowadays learn through experience. And if it makes sense to them, you know, we were just talking to one child this morning and mom was talking about how he has difficulties converting length. And, you know, one of the things we did in the session was actually getting him to use a ruler and measure things around the room. And he actually could do it because he was motivated to do it. So this is a child who's learning through his experience. So I don't think we should put them in those separate boxes, but understand that for different things, maybe they use different strengths.
So, Maddie, what does that look like? What do different learning styles look like in a classroom?
Well, I think things that we can pick up quite early on, it's like with the visual learner, they have like a strong interest in the arts, really passionate about painting, crafting and drawing. Perhaps they're the learners who've got vivid imaginations. Perhaps they're good at like visual memory games as well. We've got auditory learners, so those are the ones who'll be shining with comes to vocal or musical abilities. Perhaps they like to sing along to songs when they're doing their homework, or always asking, oh, can we play a song in class at the same time as doing this? They perhaps have got good verbal skills and enjoy participating in discussions. maybe these are also learners who can multitask, who can listen to instructions at the same time as doing something else. And then keeping an eye out for the kinesthetic learners as well. So those ones with a talent for the sports, perhaps they're the ones that enjoy dancing and all the physical hands-on activities as well. They'll have good like hand-eye coordination, perhaps having a tendency to fidget at the same time as information is being given to them.
You're listening to an edited recording of our 8th BFM Health and Living webinar. We'll be back shortly for more BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Bigger Picture. This is an edited recording of the 8th BFM Health and Living webinar with consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Saravanandan and alternative pathway curriculum coordinator Madeline Proud. Here's more from that conversation where they discuss if kids today are struggling to learn.
Maddie, online learning must have made it much more challenging in order to be able to have those sort of, you know, be able to assess one-on-one, you know, realize and recognize which kids need different kinds of ways of learning. What has your experience been with online learning?
I think initially for everybody who had to suddenly adjust from teaching in a classroom to teaching online, it was extremely challenging, both for the teaching professionals as well as the learners. But over time, we kind of learned from each other systems that worked out. I personally found the start of every lesson was making a connection with the learners, as you would do in a classroom. Spend the first few minutes checking in with everybody, seeing how everybody is feeling, gauging that. Obviously, in a classroom environment, that's so easy. You just kind of walk around and have a general chit chat with the different learners. But suddenly, when you're online, it seemed a little bit uncomfortable to do that initially. And so that was something that I learned quickly, that I thought, this I need to do every single lesson, and just to gauge, because you can't always pick up on the body language cues, the way that the learners walk into the classroom as well. Mm-hmm. And then again, setting one set of work and then differentiating it for each of the learners. So working out a system, even just on the computer, where you could have multiple screens open so you could still track what each learner was doing as well. In a classroom, you just walk around and look at their screen or look at their work. So this was having to accommodate that and making sure you could still check in and mark and give personalized comments to the learners at that same time. And then we had great functions such as breakout rooms. So learners had the opportunity to have discussions in groups and also then one-on-one together with teachers as well. So although initially it was a big challenge, but I think ultimately everybody kind of, we got into a system that worked well.
Mm. Dr. Rajini, were you hearing feedback from parents with kids in national mainstream schools about their kids struggling and perhaps due to just different learning abilities and online learning just not being able to match up to that?
Yes, you know, different stories. Some schools would not doing lessons online. They were just sending parents homework sheets to be completed at home. There were some schools where teachers were a little bit more creative. They did quizzes online, which was positive. And then today, one family that I saw earlier were telling me how certain teachers grouped two or three classes. So you like had 70 children online at the same time, which, you know, this is at the year one and year two level. So that can be very challenging. And what was interesting was that the younger teachers, some of them were a little more IT savvy and could make learning a little bit more fun. Not across the board. Some older teachers did try. As a parent myself, I could also see how with a bunch of teenagers, it can be difficult. But some teachers did that successfully. But I think for a lot of the local schools, there were issues with IT training in using technology. It's not going to go away, right? Even with lockdowns over, they may come back. But more interestingly is the fact that I think our kids with the lockdowns have discovered technology and they love technology now. So we've got to find a way to make them love learning through technology. personally, I think.
But I'd like to look more specifically at learning disabilities. Now, those are a different kettle of fish. Dr. Rajini, when should parents suspect that their child may have a learning disability, that it's not just a different style, perhaps? And what should they do to get the right diagnosis?
I think we need to start looking out from when they're in their preschool years or even as toddlers. When you have children who play differently, that's already telling you that they are learning things differently, because play reflects what children interpret around them. Yeah, they see what's going on and they incorporate that into play. For example, at 18 months, a child will pick up the phone and pretend to say hello. Or in this day, some parents say the child picks up something like the remote control and starts pressing buttons or moving the hands like they're swiping. So they're picking up what they see around them. If your child is not doing that pretend play, imaginative play, etc., that's already a sign that your child may have some cognitive difficulties. And research shows that play is one of the best predictors of cognitive abilities in the longer term. Number two, like I said, language difficulties. So if your child is struggling to pick up language or learns language in a different way, for example, if you are a Malay or Mandarin-speaking family, but your child is speaking only in English, I would be concerned, because your child has not picked up learning the language from you in a natural way. Your child's probably picked it up by watching YouTube, but that's not a natural way of learning. And when we talk about learning in schools, you're supposed to be learning from your peers, your teachers, from the interactions that you have with people. Yeah. So I would say these are some of the red flags. Then, of course, there are other red flags. For example, if your child has motor difficulties, and by the time they're five, no matter how much you've trained them to learn to write their name, or they can't even draw a stick man at five, that would worry me. I know this doesn't, I haven't even touched on ABCs and 1, 2, 3s, right, shall we? And this is often a myth that parents think that if their children learn their ABCs and 1, 2, 3s under the age of two or under the age of three, that their kids are going to be geniuses. And it's actually not so. Yes, of course, you should know your alphabets or phonetic sounds by the time you hit 4.5. You should be able to recognize them and associate them with sounds, 4.5 to 5. And if you're not doing it by that age, the phonetic sounds especially, that's a little alarm bell.
All right. You've dashed the hopes of many parents. but also those red flags. And they're very similar in terms of what we talked about earlier, if we were just looking at children who may be struggling overall with learning anyway. Maddie, as a special education teacher, and I know you deal with older kids as well, so this is really interesting because you're preparing them to receive an education, to prepare them for adulthood. But for children with learning disabilities, what are some misconceptions that you'd like to correct when it comes to their ability to learn and to attain education?
Well, I think first of all is people with learning difficulties have low IQ. So
that's a misconception.
Totally a misconception. I think if you have the mindset that anything is achievable and given the right opportunities and access to that, then it is possible. You might think 5 years down the line, you might not have achieved at the same target of other learners of a similar age, but it could be a few years down the line.
Which leads me nicely to the next point and question about working with parents, Maddie. Chia is asking, what can parents do to teach their child with learning disabilities in terms of communication and social skills during the pandemic? I'd broaden that a little bit, Maddie, and ask if you could address just, you know, what can parents do to support children with learning disabilities?
Well, I think if you're working from a home, then it's like seizing every opportunity that you have. So, for example, if you happen to be in the car and you're driving somewhere, you can model certain behavior. You can, let's say, oh, let's play a game together. Let's practice your mathematical skills, or let's count the number of birds that we see on the journey and things like that as well. I think it's just seeking all the opportunities you can to impart those to your child. So when you are for example, cooking your dinner, invite your child to come along and be involved in that process as well. So you can teach them the skill of how to cook. You can teach them fine and gross motor skills in terms of how to hold a knife, manipulative skills in terms of being able to wash things as well. And then whilst you're doing that, for the communication side, talk through all the steps. So it's like a think aloud kind of strategy where you say, oh, here's an apple. I'm now going to wash the apple underneath the tap. Can you help me turn the tap on? And just to try to get your child involved as much in that process as possible. So just trying to incorporate really education into everyday life.
Mm. Overall, Maddie, what do we want children to achieve when we're having these discussions about different learning abilities? We're looking at differentiated teaching and recognizing where difficulties may arise. What do we want them to achieve from their whole childhood of learning?
Well, I think the ultimate goal is to have happiness. And I feel like that comes from having a supportive system around you. And looking forward to the future, enjoy what they're doing, enjoying the present, enjoying the opportunities that they foresee ahead of them. And I do feel like paying a contribution to society and having a certain level of independence and knowing that your impact will have an effect on others and how you can work together and contribute to people around you and people beyond the classroom, beyond the family home. I always say promoting engagement within the community, looking at service opportunities, because I feel like getting involved in these kinds of activities later on, it leads up to perhaps employment skills, independent skills, work experience and development. And suddenly where you might feel initially, oh my goodness, I'm stuck in this situation. But when you start to experience things, the world, as we say, the world is your oyster. You have lots of opportunities, lots of experiences, and then you have that greater sense of happiness. You have that opened mindset, willingness to try different things. And for me, that's the ultimate goal.
Dr. Rajini, your thoughts?
I always say to parents, because I deal a lot with children who have different learning abilities, I always say to parents, there's no one pathway that we need to take. And that at the end of the day, it's more important to train or to nurture independence, that child is able to feel that they have the ability to contribute. Yeah, we're always often trying to highlight the negatives in children with different learning abilities. We highlight them unconsciously by saying, oh, I'm going to help you by getting you a tutor or getting you to go to this class so you can improve, instead of saying, why don't we get teacher so-and-so to help us do this so that in future you can work out how to buy things. Giving them that idea that you're learning this not to get an A or to pass the exam so you can move on to the next level, but you need this, like when mommy goes shopping and mommy has to work out the change to make sure that the person doesn't cheat me, things like that. So, and I think it's important that parents think of learning as, nurturing those life skills. It's okay if you can't do math. All phones now have a calculator. And you can work out things like change and balance by using a calculator. You don't need to be perfect at spelling, because there are spell checks in our WhatsApp messaging services or even on computer programs. So think about working on things that you can improve that make it easier for your child to succeed, rather than always focusing on the negatives that you want to correct and perfect.
You're speaking the language of every child, Dr. Rajini. And that's exactly the takeaway message I'm getting, focusing on the child. It's learner-centered, it's child-centered. Thank you so much, Dr. Rajini, consultant, developmental pediatrician, and Madeline Proud, Alternative Pathway Curriculum Coordinator at Nexus International School.
That was an edited recording of our Health and Living webinar on helping kids to learn better, whether they do or don't have a learning disability. Watch the full webinar on facebook.com/BFM Radio and download the exclusive children's playbook from the link provided in the comments for ideas on helping kids to learn through play. This webinar series has been brought to you by AIA, enabling healthier, longer, better lives. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.